The Jerusalem Post Podcast Travel Edition is sponsored by worldjewishtravel.org, the number one platform for planning your Jewish cultural trips.
From the latest on Caribbean cruises to kosher safaris, pilgrimages to Jewish Eastern Europe and award-winning wines and international cuisine in sun-drenched Tel Aviv, sit back and enjoy the trip with the travel edition of the Jerusalem Post podcast.
Hello, David.
Hey, Mark.
So we have returned to Dubai.
It's great. We're getting loads of air miles.
Technically, and I don't want to give away a trade secret, but we never actually left Dubai.
Nor do we get the air miles. Two trade secrets for one.
We might get some points on Uber from our driver who brought us here. We've moved across Dubai, and we are in the Hilton Dubai Al Habtor City.
You might remember a couple of episodes ago, we brought you the big picture on Dubai, some of those standard places that people visit, and some of those hidden gems. Today we're bringing you something completely different.
For once, I'm going to be serious. No, but really, one of the most beautiful things that has come out of the last 18 months and the Abraham Accords is the transformation of the tourism scene in Dubai to cater for the kosher traveller.
That's absolutely the case. We should also mention that the other Emirates, particularly Abu Dhabi down the road, have also welcomed and opened their doors to the kosher traveller. But it's in Dubai, which really is the tourism hub of the United Arab Emirates, where there has been, if you forgive the expression, an explosion of kosher certification, of kosher venues, and of kosher flavours.
And during this podcast, we will look at some of the highlights of kosher Dubai. The reason we've come to the Hilton Dubai Al Habtor City is this is the first hotel in Dubai that has a fully kosher kitchen, and as a kosher traveller, you can dine like any other customer.
What's amazing here, and we'll get much more into this hotel during the course of this pod, and we will be bringing you other kosher venues around the city, but you walk in to reception. At check-in, there is a QR code, and it says above it, for kosher, scan here. To the right of check-in, there is a large television, a large electronic sign, and it's going running through about four or five ads for things that you can find in the hotel, and one of them says kosher breakfast, and there's a gorgeous picture of the buffet that's on offer.
And it's not just the Hilton Dubai where you can eat kosher. There are three hotels in Al Habtor City. We are sitting in the Hilton. To my right is the V Hotel, part of the Curio Collection, where I will be staying. And to our left is the Al Habtor Palace,
which we will take a look at, but at which neither of us is staying. And I am here in the Hilton. That's enough of an intro. But as we do at this point in every pod, time for the quiz. And the question this time, it's a controversial one, so we'll see if you agree with the answer at the end of the pod or not. But the question is very simple. What does kosher mean?
The answer at the end of the podcast. So we're starting at the Firefly restaurant under a cabana in the sun at the pool of the Hilton Al Habtor City. I'm joined by the Complex Executive Chef, but I'll ask him to introduce himself.
Hi, nice to meet you both. My name is Nicholas Shadbolt. I'm originally from London in the UK.
Yay!
We couldn't tell.
Yay!
And it's good to see fellow Londoners. Yeah, I started in London some time ago, quite a long time ago actually, working in some famous properties in the UK, learning my trade. 28, 29 years ago, I decided to go international. And since then, lucky enough to have been all over the world, really, working at globally iconic addresses. It's been a pretty cool experience.
Where have you been on your travels and what brought you to Dubai?
I have been to Dubai before. I worked here 10 or 11 years ago. But internationally, Lebanon. I worked in Beirut, a little bit in Saudi Arabia doing a pre-opening. And then the rest has been mainly in Southeast Asia or Asia. I was in Shanghai in China, Hong Kong, Macau, Philippines, Vietnam, Cambodia, also lived in Australia for a number of years. It's been good for me culturally to experience different foods, meet different people, and also it's been, you know, fun.
The title executive chef sounds very fancy, very posh, as we say back in the UK, but what does that mean?
Oh, I mean, it's my responsibility to ensure that the food quality is there, the presentation, obviously guest relations, financial diligence. You know, it's to oversee the whole operation and make sure that we're going in the direction we need to be. Obviously elevating the food quality, keeping our costs under control because it is a business. Just making the experience for the guest overall superb.
This is an enormous complex with three hotels and you're its executive chef. How many food and beverage outlets do you manage and how much time do you actually get to be in the kitchen?
Well, we've got over 20 outlets, plus we've got in-room dining, banqueting, so it's a big operation. As for how much time I get in the kitchen, it really depends on the day. You know, some days there's lots of meetings, some days you've got the opportunity to get in the kitchen, but I walk the complex every day, all day. Like, the number of steps I'm doing now is incredible. I'm doing 18 to 20,000 steps a day, which is 15 kilometers. I'm always try to be in the kitchens when it's service time. You know, make sure they're okay. If they need support, I can jump in. But we generally know who and what is going to be busy at what time. So that's really where I focus. You know, if they're busy, I need to be there. If it's another restaurant, go there as well. It all depends on the day and the business needs of the complex.
As you said, there are more than 20 options out there. But can you, in a minute, describe the general dining experience before we get on to talking kosher?
It is a dining destination. Really is, with so many outlets, so many bars and restaurants. There's a wide variety, mostly fun dining experiences, but they're all very good quality. As an example, we've got Ribs and Brew, which is a gastro pub, American style, very popular, great business. We also have BQ in the Palace, which is a French bistro. And another example would be Well Cut, which is our steakhouse. Obviously, there's many more choices as well.
We've come here to talk about Kosher Dubai, and we've come to this hotel because it is the first hotel with a proper kosher kitchen in Dubai. Can you tell us about the kosher dining experience? Food, the wines, just, you know, what can customers expect?
We were one of the first hotels to get kosher certification. We work closely with the rabbis. We do a kosher breakfast for the guests are in-house. And then, depending on the situation, we supply lunch and dinner, depending on the packages and what the guests want.
You didn't really mention some of the names of the places, but I think people can imagine some of the top hotels in the world that you've managed, with the ability to, you know, cook with incredible ingredients. And just to name something that came straight into my head, you know, to work with lobster, which obviously in a kosher kitchen you're never going to go near. So what's it like to manage a kosher kitchen?
We work closely with a rabbi. We get the best ingredients we can based on the rabbi's advice, and then we create dishes around that. Obviously the rabbi also always gets their approval. He's very supportive. It's a pleasure to work with, to be honest.
Of course, the best place to find out more information, not just about the dining, but about all the things that are on offer here at the Al Habtor City Collection, go to the website alhabtorcity.com, or you can look at Instagram, which is at Hilton Dubai HC, at Habtor Palace, and V Hotel Dubai.
Nicholas Shadbolt, thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, gentlemen.
Let's eat some lunch.
So just at the end of that interview, the chef de cuisine, the head chef for the kosher kitchen by the name of Karna Bahadun, brought out an incredible display of food. Not only are there rich colours, oranges and purples, and of course hummus, and a quinoa salad and a mixed vegetable salad, the matbucha that is orange, the beetroot salad that is purple, but it's all so beautifully presented. There are challah rolls, there are pita breads, bagel type breads. This is food fit for a king. And remember, we're staying at a regular special Hilton hotel that has this kosher offering. Ever wish there was a Jewish trip advisor? Visit worldjewishtravel.org for a one-stop shop to plan your Jewish cultural vacation at destinations around the world.
Find local tours and guides, discover authentic restaurants and boutique hotels, all with a Jewish story to tell.
Don't miss events with our unique cultural calendar, or simply absorb a city's Jewish story with our blogs and travel ebooks.
Start your journey at worldjewishtravel.org.
Certainly the most spectacular show I've seen in my life.
On the ground floor of the V by Curio Collection Hotel is a show called La Pearl. It's created by the Belgian artistic director and choreographer Franco Dragoni. It's a show like no other that you'll see. It's not just dance, it's not just circus, it's not just acrobatics, it's not just motorcycles, divers, Chinese dancers. I can go on and on and on.
You often do.
Thank you. We have just sat through 90 minutes of, as David said, probably the most spectacular thing I have ever seen. And again, this is Dubai. It's done with that little bit of extra pizzazz. I could come again tomorrow and the day after, and I wouldn't get tired of watching this.
Now, we were privileged to have front row seats. Not everybody's going to do that because it is expensive if you do it that way. But we also had the VIP treatment, which meant a reception beforehand. So there are things in Dubai that will cost a lot. But if you want one of the most special experiences that you will ever have in theatre, it might be worth the investment.
Starting prices for the tickets here are very similar to going to the theatre in Israel. It's an affordable experience. If you like the theatre, you like circus, you like performance, I would highly recommend doing this. And as we've said, it is 2 seconds walk from the hotel.
You're listening to the Jerusalem Post podcast Travel Edition. Find us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter at MarkDavidPod, or mail us at markdavidpod@gmail.com. We wish you a belated Ramadan Kareem, because right now here in Dubai it's the first day of the holy month and we are celebrating the end of the first day of fasting at an iftar.
Here in the Le Patio restaurant in the Al Habtor Palace Hotel, a beautiful buffet is laid out in front of us.
Let's have a look at some of the various dishes. Many people have the custom at the start of iftar to have sweet dishes such as kunafa. There are all sorts of nuts, almonds, walnuts. Here we have Mark actually taking an apricot as we move along this particular buffet. There are sweet things, there are savory things. At the moment we're only looking at the sweet, but a lot of people, of course, after they've had that first taste of honey, we'll move on to more of the savoury dishes. So let's have a look what we've got along here.
So we have chicken kabza, mutton biryani, fish hara, a very attractive looking mixed grill. Do you want some of that, David?
No, I think my vegetarianism might get in the way.
Shrimp Thai curry, roasted chicken, shish birak. And the buffet goes on and on. And on.
This is the sort of place where I think we're going to make an Instagrammable style video, just because there are so many things here. Over on this side, we had feta and fulfula Egyptian beans. There is the usual mix of salads. Of course, Middle Eastern being dominant, lots of different coloured olives. We also have a traditional fattoush salad here and some of the Western specials that you're used to as well.
And over to my favourite section, fried food, we have falafel, meat kibbeh, spinach fataya, and some very nice looking mini sambusek.
Etc, etc, etc. Good morning, Mark. Another day, another breakfast.
another breakfast for 10, I think, in front of us.
And before we turned on the microphones, Mark actually said he wonders if people in Dubai, the people who are working here, the hotel managers, think that, or they've seen on television, you know, the reputation that Jewish mums have, and feel that we need to be absolutely stuffed in every meal.
The staff here are definitely feeders.
We're having kosher breakfast in a totally separate dining room.
With a separate kitchen.
Which we'll get into in a minute. There's a buffet outside, but just to say what is in front of us, what's on our plates. We have a lovely beetroot salad, the munching that you may have heard at the start, little tarts with spinach and tomato on the top.
A nice little toast here with avocado and tomato as well.
Have you tried that one?
Not yet, no. I'll have a go now. If I lose my voice for a couple of minutes, you know what's going on.
Try it now. Tell me what you think.
Mmm. Mmm.
Have you got to the after?
It's just coming. There's the chili.
Yeah, there's the chili. Nice. It's very, very good.
Well, I'll finish that off. Carry on.
We've got our omelettes with a choice of toppings, toast, and beautifully piped butter.
Butter?
Oh, we'll get back to that as well. Good point.
Interesting.
We've got all of the salads you could desire, all of the hot food you could desire. There are certain weirdnesses, though, that we're about to explain. And we just had a chat with the rabbi, who is the person responsible for kosher food in the hotel. And he explained those weirdnesses to us. So, Mark.
Apparently there's no bacon. The buffet is completely separate. It's not like a section of the main buffet or the main hotel restaurant. You're in a separate part of the hotel.
With the synagogue next door.
Yeah, it's essentially three or four meeting rooms have been converted into a restaurant, a synagogue, a kitchen. It feels like any other hotel. There's a full breakfast. I say a full breakfast. There is no dairy here. So my coffee is made with almond milk.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming this is vegan butter.
It must be. Yesterday... I had an amazing sort of moussaka. I'm vegetarian, so I know that there's no meat in it, but it was covered in cheese, but we'd just been told there was no cheese.
Yeah.
So it's a vegan cheese, but it absolutely tasted like the real thing.
Our chef here has a lovely accent, and when he says the word vegan, he says bacon.
Yeah.
Which is a little confusing, but he is saying vegan.
Lovely Nepalese guy.
Yeah. The breakfast isn't completely vegan, because right. There is eggs here, but the breakfast is made parv. And there's an obvious reason. The kitchen is a meaty kitchen. The kitchen is used for events. The kitchen is used for lunches and dinners.
Now, I believe they can do dairy for an event, but then they have to take over a whole new kitchen, make it kosher, etc., etc. So that's the preference, is obviously, generally, there is a greater preference for meat dining out and about. So they went for the meat option, and the breakfast is, as Mark said, what we call parv, which means dairy-free.
For me, I think there's a second reason. I think we'll talk to the rabbi later, but I think he's seen what goes on here. The staff here are so obliging that when you ask them something, they never want to say no. So if you turn around to them and say, can I actually have proper milk? They probably will. So you have to be a little bit careful. And I think the rabbi has therefore drawn a line and said,
absolutely,
this is not to have milk in it. We can't allow milk and meat because mm-hmm. it will contaminate. So the kitchen is kept 100% kosher. Obviously, we've met the rabbi and someone is supervising, but I think that may be part of the logic as well.
A great breakfast, really tasty. It's on the second floor here in the main Hilton, which is the central hotel of the three that we were talking about yesterday. So we're going to finish our breakfast, and then we're going to take you to the Jewish community.
You're listening to the Jerusalem Post Podcast Travel Edition with David Harris and Mark Gordon. We're here in Dubai, finding out about kosher food and the growth in the kosher food scene in Dubai. You can't understand the kosher food scene without getting behind the story of the growth of the community and kosher food. We've come to meet Rabbi Levi Duchman, who is the head of the Emirates Kashrut Authority.
Good morning or good afternoon, wherever you're listening from. Thank you very much for having me on this beautiful show, the podcast. I'm originally from New York, Brooklyn, New York. I've been living here in the UAE for about 7 years now, and looking forward to discussing throughout this podcast about how the growth of the Jewish community, has come about and the growth of kosher food options, etc. Because everyone knows if you came here just about a decade ago, you wouldn't have any kosher food available, and any kosher you would want, you would probably have to bring in your suitcases or something.
So you had the whole world to choose from. Why did you pick the United Arab Emirates?
The short answer is because the whole United Arab Emirates has the whole world in it. So it just makes it very, very easy to choose.
How did you keep kosher in the first years here? As you've said, there was nothing. So is it just suitcases? Can you find some way of, for example, sourcing chicken for your chicken soup locally?
In the beginning, of course, if we needed any kosher chicken or meat, we would have to import it ourselves with suitcases. But, you know, the UAE imports so many things from all around the world and a lot of food products from the U.S. So from when I moved here, if you would go into the local Spinneys or Lulu or Carrefour, you would find many products with a kosher symbol on it, whether it's OU kosher, OK kosher.
Not because they were looking for a Jewish market. It just happens that those foods are already fit for kosher.
Yes, correct. So there was no like kosher aisle in Spinneys in Mall of the Emirates or Carrefour there. There was just, you could identify the kosher certification on many of the products. So that made it much easier to maintain and to keep kosher.
How has the last 18 months and the signing of the Abraham Accords changed the community here? And has it changed your organization?
So for the local Jewish community, like I mentioned earlier, the United Arab Emirates has always been an open and tolerant place where the leadership always promotes coexistence. And our Jewish community before, prior to the Abrahamic Accord, really had everything we need. We even had local kosher chicken. First we started in Sharjah, and then we had to move into something bigger, actually, a bigger slaughterhouse. And we found the place in Al Ain, where now we have every month kosher chicken slaughtering. So that was something, and really anything that the Jewish community needed. Now, what changed since the Abrahamic Accord for us as the community, and or just heard the UAE ambassador, Youssef Al-Otaiba, mentioning this on one of his recent publications, that the Abrahamic Accords is not just a new thing between two countries or two religions. It's really about connecting the people. And I think there was always this misconception of what's happening in the Middle East. What does it mean for a Jew to walk around the Middle East? What does it mean for an Arab from the Gulf to walk around Tel Aviv, Haifa, Jerusalem? What would it mean? And I think when the world sees that, yes, of course, it's regular. Any Jew could come to the UAE, could come to Dubai, could walk around with a kippah openly as a Jew, and the same thing, any Emirati or Bahraini or Moroccan could go to visit Israel, and they could go enjoy the Israeli cuisine and enjoy walking around Israel, meeting Israeli, whether it's for business, for culture. And when the rest of the world realizes this, it really makes a tremendous impact on them and say, hey, what's all this division about? What are we looking to separate people? And that is where we had the biggest change here in our community, by now the Jewish community here attracting people not only from Israel, but people from France, from America, from the UK. And these people were always able to move here. So they just never knew that this is what the Middle East is about, and this is where the Abrahamic Accord gave them this opportunity to learn about the Middle East.
Tell us about the Emirates Agency for Kosher Certification. Who has it? How much is it growing?
The UAE is known for their hospitality, and especially the leadership here. Now, right when the UAE and Israel signed this normalization, His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed said, wow, if we're going to have so many Jewish people coming to the UAE, we must have kosher food available. So they sent out a letter or notice to all of the hotels in the capital in Abu Dhabi, asking them to please get a kosher certification so that they're able either to produce kosher food in their hotel, or that they could supply kosher food through their hotel to any Jewish visitors coming to any of the hotels. And that really what was the catalyst for us to turn to the government and tell the government, listen, if we want to be successful with this, we need a local certification. So we were able to open up Emirates Agency for Kosher Certification. It was first opened in Abu Dhabi, and now we have a branch here in Dubai. And this certification agency is here to enable kosher food around the United Arab Emirates, whether it's the kosher certification for Etihad Airways, whether it's certifying kosher chicken, whether it's for the kosher restaurants in Dubai, or whether it's for hotels. Like you mentioned earlier, you're staying in Hilton Al Haptor, so that their kitchen is also under Emirates Agency for Kosher Certification. And today the agency is continuing to grow, helping hotels, helping restaurants, helping young entrepreneurs that want to be able to open and to service the kosher market. So we're here to fill that need and to make sure the service is available.
And for those listeners that prefer a stricter kashrut, that want glatt or mahadrin, is that available in the Emirates?
Our values when we started Emirates Agency for Kosher Certification should be that every single Jew, no matter what their religious affiliation is or isn't, should feel comfortable eating from our agency. So we actually keep to the highest standard. So no matter how religious one is or isn't, everyone will feel comfortable to eat the food. And there are certain things we have to remove from the menus to ensure that it can maintain the highest kosher standard. And for us, we want to carry the same values of the UAE.
We've mentioned Dubai and we've mentioned Abu Dhabi. How easy is it to keep kosher in Sharjah, in Fujairah, and Ras Al Khaimah, as an example?
So look, the UAE, like you mentioned, there are 7 Emirates, and it's not only Dubai and Abu Dhabi. Of course, you have Ras Al Khaimah, Fujairah, Al Quwain, Ajman. So over there, you have less of constant open kosher kitchens, but of course, we work closely with all the Emirates enabling kosher food. Just a few months ago, we had a kosher wedding in Ajman, where of course we would, Emirates Agency for Kosher Certification will facilitate with the hotel, with the kosher caterers, to ensure that you could keep things on the highest standard. So yes, our primary focus is still in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, but if any of the Emirates, just remember, just 2 weeks ago, we've done a kosher lunch in Ras Al Khaimah with some dignitaries meeting the leadership in Ras Al Khaimah. So it's a mandate which we cover the entire United Arab Emirates with focus in different Emirates. And if you ask me, I think eventually there will be kosher restaurants in these Emirates and there will be more kosher food available as things continue to grow.
We've talked restaurants, hotels. For locals, are there bakeries? Is there a butcher? How does that work?
It's not only about the kosher food, kosher restaurants and this. I think for us as the Jewish community here, whether it's with our Emirates Agency for Kosher Certification, whether it's for the synagogues, whether it's for the Shabbat services, or really any of the services the Jewish community has here, I think it's important if you want to attract the Jewish visitor and you want to make a place where a country or an attraction where you want Jewish tourists to come, to enjoy, to feel comfortable, to bring their families together with them and to travel to a new place, a place where they haven't been as a child with their parents, and really something new. I think it's important to show that we're ready with the entire infrastructure, not only kosher food, it's really with everything. And this is something which we really put a focus on. So in case, God forbid, a tourist is here and they have a health challenge and we need to help them find the doctor, or whether it's someone which could come into a financial crisis while they're traveling here, and we're there for them. I think this is the real important things to make sure that the UAE is a safe and good place for the Jewish tourists. And I think numbers don't lie. And you could see we've been very, very successful, Baruch Hashem, to enable literally tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of visitors coming. The UAE is not the only country that had the Abrahamic Accord, but it's definitely leading the countries in tourism, in Jewish tourism. And this is because we're thankful to our team. We're thankful to our local Jewish community that they had this Hachnasas Archim. They were here ready to welcome all the guests. And I think this is just the beginning. I think it will continue to grow even more and more.
One of the things that we didn't mention, I think, at the start of this interview is actually where we're sitting, which is within a Jewish nursery. And there are 20, 30 kids who are coming here every day. If you take into account all of the Jewish education here, there's 120 kids in Jewish education. Before we say thank you, how can people find out more about the community, about the things that you offer?
You could Google any of the specific projects, or you could go online. If you want to learn more about the tourist activities, we have Chabad.ae. So that is where you can find. If you want to learn more about the local Jewish community, you could go on JewishUAE.com. And like I said, we really have so many beautiful communities around the United Arab Emirates where more people could come, could learn about us. And if anyone listening here is planning a trip and needs any help with anything, whatever it may or may not be, it will be our pleasure to assist you guys in any way that we can.
Rabbi Duchman, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
This is Mark Gordon from the Jerusalem Post Podcast Travel Edition. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at MarkDavidPod, or mail us at markdavidpod@gmail.com. When I came up with the idea of a kosher podcast, I thought this will be nice to see what food is out there. Never did I think that so much food will be forced down me in the space of 48 hours. But the food here is so good, and there is so much to choose from. We are at the Kosher Place restaurant in the Jumeirah Creekside Hotel in Dubai.
I've got the menu with me. We've both gone on the lighter side of things. I just went for an opening of salads. It's a traditional Middle Eastern mix. So I've got focaccia with a couple of pitas, eggplant or aubergine dishes, cabbage, the beetroot or beets that's been ever present through our visit to this part of the world, carrots, and so on.
I have ordered the arroz, and although it's a starter, it will be enough to fill me up for lunch and for the rest of the day.
What is arroz?
What is arroz? Arroz is essentially...
It's a little white thing that grows in a rice paddy.
No, that's more than one rice.
Okay.
Arroz.
Yes.
Singular is essentially a pita bread stuffed with mince and flavorings and herbs, put in a grill and then cut in quarters. Makes a lovely snack, although, as I said here, it makes a lovely meal. I'm halfway through and I think I'm ready to surrender.
A lot of the dishes here are very Middle Eastern. Also, interestingly, I noticed throughout our stay, not just in kosher restaurants, but in other places that we visited, there is a lot of veal used.
The restaurant itself, when I came here, I thought it would be a small tucked away corner of the hotel.
In fact, you said to me, I think it's just in a hotel meeting room that's been converted just for an occasional kosher meal.
It takes up a whole corner of the hotel. I can see seating for 200 people.
Probably. So many staff here.
An open kitchen with a glass wall so you can watch people working. This is a Jumeirah Hotel quality restaurant, and it's kosher.
In a minute or two's time, we hope we'll get a quick word with the executive chef, who is responsible not only for the kosher place, but also a major kosher catering operation known as Treat Kosher, the website of which, if you want to have a look, is treatkosher.ae. I had a quick look through what they offer on their website, and you would be absolutely flabbergasted in a very positive way about the range of products and the ways that they can deliver their products.
Treat Kosher will be able to cater an event for you, deliver food to your hotel, host an event in a restaurant, host breakfast at your hotel. Treat seem to be super flexible. You tell them what you need for your event, for your tour.
Which, of course, for big groups that are coming here, is really important. So, for example, Itzik, the manager of this restaurant where we are now, was saying that they just did something out in the desert. And there are many, many desert experiences in Dubai, but the one they just did was a kosher experience in the middle of the desert.
And currently, they are doing 5 to 6 events a day. And Pesach just gone. They have catered for 1,000 people for Seder night. We caught up with executive chef of Treat Kosher, Shimon Ben Shitrit.
I'm the only chef from Israel, kosher, in Dubai. So I know exactly my experience, what the Israeli food they like. They travel all the day. They want to come to the restaurant to eat quickly. So when they come, they have quickly kind of salad on the table. They have our focaccia, made focaccia, pita. All we make here in the restaurant, we have a taboon. The name is taboon. There's a
oven. Type of oven.
Yeah. We make directly everything homemade here. We have here all the meat from Israel. I mean, the pargiot, the entrecote, homemade kebab. Also,
is it easy to source that type of meat?
It's not easy here in Dubai to get all the meat. We bring the meat sometimes from Poland, sometimes from French. Now we bring the best entrecote from America. Also, we have the side dish and the starter, many special like veal cigar. We have the pastilla. We have the sinia with the tahina. Also, we have fresh fish. Every day we have 3 kind. We make this directly on the grill.
From the catering side of things, is it very different to what you offer in the restaurant here, or it's sort of more of the same?
No, of course it's different because, you know, in the restaurant, it's all the food is a la carte. So everything must to be directly for the on the plates. Also, we have the frontale kitchen, so it's very different. In the catering, we have a menu for the catering. I mean, we have a lot of groups that come from Israel, from all over the world. They come from French, from America. So we must to make the menu for each group what they want. I have many, many kind of menu. I have every day different place, one in hotel, one in the desert, one in the yacht. All the place where they want, I can give them the food.
So you mentioned desert experience, which we already discussed before. Did you think at any point in your career as an Israeli chef specializing in kosher food that you would be in the Arabian desert giving people a really good time with kosher food?
Before, I was 4 years in Germany, in Düsseldorf. One guy came to me and said, all my experience in the world is not like this. I want to open kosher restaurant in Düsseldorf. I said, okay, this is my specialty. I come there, I open it, Israeli kosher restaurant. When they called me to come to the Dubai, I read a little bit about the Dubai because, you know, this is new for us. It's the shalom, the peace has come only in last December. So when I come, I feel like, you know, the Chabad, the Shaliach, Shlichut.
An emissary.
Yeah, to bring the people from all over the world kosher.
Shimon Ben Shitrit, executive chef for The Kosher Place and also for Treat Kosher. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Talked a lot about the kosher food scene in Dubai, but what about the community side of things? We're sitting now with David Zabinski. We'll allow him to introduce himself, but he's been here for a number of years and has seen the changes from before the Abrahamic Accords to what's happening now, and this explosion in the kosher world, and of course the myriad visitors from the Jewish world, from Israel and abroad. So David, welcome. Tell us a little bit about who you are.
Thanks, David. Thanks, Mark. My name is David Zabinski, from New York City originally. I'm an entrepreneur, I'm a podcast host myself, and I've been living in Dubai for 7 years.
You came here at 21. What inspired you to leave the comforts at home of New York and come to the Arabian Peninsula?
It's a long story that's best told usually over a glass of whiskey or a coffee. We've got neither of those in front of us right now, but I'll do my best. I grew up in two very homogeneous parts of the U.S., the Upper West Side of New York City and a very small town south of Boston. So very affluent Jewish parts of the country. and for as long as I can remember, had a fascination with, a curiosity about this part of the world, being the Middle East. And so my entire last year at university applied for jobs exclusively in the Gulf and the Levant, as well as Afghanistan and Pakistan. So I had to balance this yearning of being in the Middle East with my crazy Jewish mother who didn't want her son to move out here at the age of 21. And so how could I find a place that was in the Middle East that was going to be safe and stable and secure? And of course, Dubai ticked all those boxes. So Dubai was the landing spot for me.
And when you came, were you able to be openly Jewish, or did you feel you had to hide it?
So I actually wrote a Twitter thread about this, which went fairly viral. And I made my mom two promises before I moved here at 21. The first was I'd wear my seatbelt every time I got in the car. And the second was I wouldn't tell anyone I was Jewish. So my name is David Zubinsky, from New York City, no less. The listener can't see me right now, but I look every bit Jewish you possibly could. But I told folks upon moving here, when it came up, that I was a Catholic with Polish roots.
Wow. So you're here about 5 years, 5.5 years, and suddenly the leaders of the United Arab Emirates and the leaders of Israel are standing on balcony with the leader of the United States, signing deals, talking about the future. Could you ever have envisaged when you first came here and you had to, as you say, tell people that you were something else? Could you ever have imagined this change and how it came about?
No. No. So I moved here in 2015, again at 21, and I was incredibly naive, almost ignorant. I thought I was one of maybe two or three Jews in the entire country. And then later found out in 2018, it took me 3 years to realize that there was a really flourishing, successful Jewish community here. And then I'd say I became a bit more attuned to the Jewish community here and some of the politics. I'd say 2018, 2019, the writing wasn't on the wall that there'd be normalization, but it certainly helped create an environment where it'd be less surprising as it would have been in 2015, for example, for me. But to your point, man, surreal to see that imagery, surreal.
And what has changed in the last 18 months?
There's been a normalization between countries, but what it's done for me personally and what I'm most thankful for is that it's normalized dialogue. I think for a lot of folks in this part of the world, especially Arabs, speaking about Israel or Judaism was taboo. It was not forbidden, but it was just a topic that a lot of folks didn't feel comfortable speaking about. And now that you've had leadership here normalize relations with Israel, what it's helped folks do is normalize discussions about Israel, discussions about Judaism. And that, of course, when you've got this interfaith dialogue, and that's a phrase thrown around quite often, but now you're truly seeing interfaith dialogue amongst Khaliji Arabs, Levant Arabs, North African Arabs, Israeli Jews, American Jews, European Jews. And the friendships, the partnerships that emerge from that dialogue, that to me has been the most important component.
With peace, there's been a very large influx of Jewish and Israeli tourists. How has that affected the community? And do you think it's been for the better for the existing community?
For the better, certainly. What I'd like to think, it's opened Israeli Jews, American Jews, European Jews' eyes to this part of the world. The Jewish community here is growing. You've had folks move here full time. You've had folks here doing long-term business. And that's all great, but we ought to ensure that the emphasis, the focus, again, is on relationships, whether it's with Jews or Emiratis or anyone else living in the country, as opposed to just rushing to get something done for the sake of doing business.
By your own admission, you've been on a fascinating, maybe slightly crazy, personal journey as far as Judaism is concerned. Fill us in a little bit on that story.
So I was raised Jewish, right? I was bar mitzvahed. I went to Hebrew school. I went to a Jewish preschool. But I suppose I never really thought anything about my Jewish self or my Jewish identity simply because I was always part of the majority. Like I said, I grew up in very, very homogenous Jewish parts of the U.S. There was nothing ever unique about being Jewish. And then moving here, where for the first time in my life I was a minority, it's when I truly began to explore my own Jewish self and what that means. And now I'm half Shomer Shabbat. My phone goes off Friday to Saturday. My computer goes off Friday to Saturday. Yeah, okay, I still get in the car and I'll still drive to the gym and I'm lifting weights. But again, that's a digital detox that if you had asked me 5, 10, 15 years ago that I'd be doing, I'd say you're out of your mind. You know, I go to shul on high holidays. I didn't go to shul once aside from my bar mitzvah growing up. So that's an evolution that certainly wouldn't have happened had I stayed in New York City or in Sharon, Massachusetts. It's an evolution that happened in the United Arab Emirates, which when I say today, I have to pinch myself. But it's been an evolution that's been beautiful.
You said you were a fellow podcaster. Tell us about your podcast and where people can listen to it.
My main business is actually in commodities. And I found myself in Zambia last year. And I began speaking to this 18-year-old Zambian kid who was foregoing university to start a tomato farm. And I never heard an 18-year-old tell me he was starting a tomato farm. I was really, really intrigued. So I asked him, I mean, man, what is it about tomato farming that you're so passionate about? Do you have a seed, a plot of land, an irrigation system? Why tomato farming? And he said to me, I'm African. What else can I do? So what does that mean? And he asked me, have you ever seen an African founder or entrepreneur do something other than farming? It floored me because my initial response was, yeah, of course. But then I had to really think and I realized that all of the podcasts we listen to, tweets we read about, headlines we see online, talk about these entrepreneurs and founders in Silicon Valley. How about the founders not from Silicon Valley? And so that gave birth to the podcast, Not From Silicon Valley, in which till this point we featured 17 founders from all around the world, from Angola, Cameroon, Morocco, Egypt, to Vietnam, Philippines, to Peru, Mexico, to Kazakhstan, to everywhere in between. It's been the privilege of a lifetime. And we're now in the process of something really, really, really exciting, which I can't discuss just yet, but you'll have to stay tuned. But to find the podcast, you can find it Apple, Spotify, Google, wherever you find your podcasts. And it's called Not From Silicon Valley.
David, thank you so much.
Mark, thank you.
I finally done it.
I don't want to know.
I got you in the world's tallest building.
Beautifully, beautifully done. So how many floors are there in the Burj Khalifa, approximately?
I think it's over 130.
And you managed to get me up all the way to the
first floor of the Burj Khalifa.
We're above the ground. There's another floor below me. I can see people dining below.
And if you look above you, there's a roof to stop you seeing the other 130 floors and give you neck ache.
I was brave. I put my head out of this beautiful terrace and looked up to see as far up as I possibly could.
So why have I tricked you into the world's tallest building?
Food.
Food. That's why I tricked you. We're about to go in a lift. No, not
you
really.
You thought you were here for dinner.
Tonight, David. No, we are at the Armani Hotel, designed by famous fashion designer Giorgio Armani. He has brought his signature style to Dubai to offer a stylish, inclusive dining and hotel experience.
Being that this is the Jerusalem Post podcast's travel edition kosher special from Dubai, the reason we've come into this hotel is to sample a kosher restaurant.
And not just any restaurant, the Armani Caf restaurant.
The menu is quite expansive.
It is very expansive. I cannot afford anything.
The menu is meat. It's expansive. It starts with tabbouleh and bruschetta, salmon bruschetta, heirloom tomato gazpacho, and runs through a variety of soups and offers sandwiches. And if you are prepared to splash out a fair amount, you can get a premier rib US Black Angus weighing approximately 1 kilogram with baked potato wedges, seasonal vegetables, mushroom fricasse, and pepper sauce.
The restaurant also offers a fine selection of drinks, including kosher wines, and it has a balcony with a fabulous view of the fountains of Dubai. And the man behind this amazing menu is Chef Khaldun Anis Nasser, who is the chef de cuisine at the Armani Hotel in Dubai.
First of all, welcome to Armani Caf. My name is Khaldun, originally from Syria. I joined the Armani Hotel 12 years back for a pre-opening.
The menu looks incredibly opulent, rich. We've tasted it. It's beautiful. There are wonderful flavors. How would you describe it to people listening who may be thinking about coming here?
Let's say all about products and quality of the food. Fresh product locally, actually. And the premium products, we get it from USA, from Israel, from UK. For example, we have our Black Angus premium beef, which people really, really love it.
You get the fresh products. What makes the Armani Caf special? What is it about what you do with those products that gives you the value added?
As a chef, you have to cook with passion. What the things you love, you serve it to the people to reach what they expected from you. Let's say Armani Hotel, the Burj Khalifa, this nice view as you see it in, from the balcony. So they expect a lot. So we have to put a lot of effort to serve the best food in the town.
For guests that stay in the Armani Hotel, can they get the food from the restaurant as room service?
At the moment, we're not offering room service. However, we have the takeaway offers, which if the in-house guests wish to have a kosher food, we can serve it in, as a takeaway.
If you want to know more about this fabulous restaurant and the work of Khaldun, then perhaps the best way to do so is via the website, which is ArmaniHotelDubai.com, and then just look through the dining options for Armani Caf.
Chef Khaldun, Ramadan Kareem, and thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Wish you enjoy your experience. We love to serve our guests the best kosher food in town.
Our time in Dubai is almost at an end. We've had wonderful experiences wherever we've been, but we want to leave the final word to the people who have been hosting us, which are the Al Hatbor City Collection. And we're delighted to be joined by the complex commercial director, who is Sufyan El Alam.
Al Hatbor family has been known for so many decades of coming up with great concepts, coming up with great hotel products and F&B and dining concepts. So our Hatbor City is aiming to become Dubai's biggest lifestyle and entertainment one-stop shop or destination within the destination of Dubai. As you can see, the platform or the focal point of our complex is the Las Vegas water-themed show, La Perle by Dragoni, which has been a great addition to Dubai entertainment scenery. While in COVID-19, Las Vegas shows were closed, were on hold, Dubai show La Perle was happening. That's become our grand life show. The 23 restaurants around the complex from different scenery, from Turkish to Lebanese to Arabic to Italian to Japanese, you name them. And also the three hotels, plus the fact that we are by the water canal with all this attraction of bikes to be rented, scooters to be rented, the jogging track. We believe that we nailed it. We believe that we have it all. And whoever comes to our city, Al Hatbor City, I don't think he will have time or even the urge to go anywhere else because he has it all.
You just told us there was no need to leave Al Hatbor City.
Yeah, no need at all, yeah.
And certainly, even if you're not in Al Hatbor City, come to La Perle. It was brilliant. But if you want to go and see some of the other attractions of Dubai, where are we in relation to other great attractions in Dubai?
Well, I don't know if you've seen it. I mean, we are the center of Dubai. Al Hatbor City is located in the center of Dubai. It's only 15 minutes drive when it's really traffic, when it's really heavy traffic to the airport. It's 10 minutes to go to La Mer. La Mer, this is a new attraction or the new development by the sea where you have restaurants, shisha lounges, also public beach. We are 20 minutes drive to Jumeirah area, where else there's also other hotels, other public beaches. 10 minutes drive to Dubai Mall, the biggest mall in the world. Another 15 minutes drive to Mall of the Emirates. So I believe, and also the clinic, hospitals, we are only a stone thrown away from us. So we are centrally located in the heart of the new Dubai that Sheikh Mohammed has envisioned, and our Habtour family was part of this envisioning and created this city, Al Habtour City. Do you like horses? So maybe we can take you and see our Al Habtour Polo Resort, which is there is a stable and the hotel, and this is where the place where there are all the polo competitions happening every winter season.
We're creating this podcast predominantly about Kosher Dubai. Why the decision to head in that direction?
Well, since UAE opened the relationship or doors with Israel with the Abraham Accord, more than 500,000 of Israelis visited Dubai as well. So, and I believe the vision of our owners wanted always to be different and always to be ahead of the game with a market as strategic, as unique, as demanding as the Israeli one. So that's why the vision of our owners wanted us to be able to cater to that specific niche of Israeli Jewish clientele by offering the kosher food and by offering a kosher rabbi and having a kosher restaurant at the hotel. We were or the very few of the first who came up with the kosher food concept, and now we are ripping off the result of that and the benefit of that. Coincidentally, this year Ramadan, the holy month of Ramadan, is happening and coinciding with the Passover of Israel. So we're kind of blessed to have both two holidays happening at the same month. We've seen a good surge of bookings which came from Israel, spending this glorious days with us in Dubai, enjoying not only the good weather which is still happening in Dubai, because still it was not that hot, but also the great food and gastronomic kosher food that our teams have prepared for those special guests. So it has been a big success, kosher food operation and Passover operation, along with Ramadan with our Muslim clientele.
Sufyan, where can people get more details about the Al Habtour City collection?
Well, it's easy, so alhabtourcity.com. They can follow us on Instagram at Hilton Dubai HC or at Habtour Palace and at V Hotel Dubai. Anywhere you can just put Al Habtour City on the Google or Yahoo search, you will find us as the first search results. And you can always come to Dubai and ask the first taxi, I want to go to Al Habtour City.
Sufyan, shukran.
La shukra ala wajib. Tuda ghaba. Lovely having you.
Oh. It's all over, David.
On the one hand, it's very sad because we have to move on. But think of the positive, of the memories that we've had, of the friendships that we've built up, and of the amazing, amazing time over the last 3 days.
I'm also thinking of the lovely poolside cabana we're sat in. Seventh floor here at the Hilton.
We've spent 3 days at the Al Habtour City Collection. It's been wonderful, as you've already heard, the kosher breakfast, there's fantastic catering if that's your thing, all the three hotels that are here, the funky V, the rather plush palace, and this Hilton where we are now, all terrific, all offer access to kosher food.
And they know how to do kosher like a good Jewish mother, because they feed you here. They are feeders. You think you're finished and they will give you more.
I wonder if we'll have to pay excess on the plane on the way back.
I'm not sure I'll fit in the seat, to be honest. If you think back 18 months ago when in Abu Dhabi the Department of Culture said every hotel needs to have a kosher option on the menu, and look where we've come. We've now got kosher hotel kitchens in Dubai. It's a wonderful thing.
Now we should say our thank yous. Greg and Farah at the Al Habtour City Collection, thank you so much for looking after us and for the really heartfelt smiles along the way.
To Rabbi Levi Duchman and his delightful colleagues at the Emirates Agency for Kosher Certification, Adaya and Misbah, who have been with us helping plan this trip since we started about 6 months ago.
Also our thanks to the restaurant and catering, Treat Kosher and Kosher Place, and also the Armani Caf at the Armani Hotel.
And a huge thank you to Dubai's Department of Tourism and Commerce Marketing for bringing us over here.
Now it's our regular request that you get interactive, get involved with us. Obviously, the first thing we'd love for you to do is to subscribe.
Or you can look at our social media channels or contact us on email at markdavidpod. The email address is markdavidpod@gmail.com.
And of course, if you could write a lovely review on whichever podcast provider you choose, that would be wonderful too.
David, would you like to give us the answers to that easy quiz question?
Okay, so we asked you, what does kosher actually mean? And there are lots of possibilities, and the ones that we plumped for were fit or proper. If you have an alternative, please do let us know.
I think we really have to say goodbye now.
Goodbye, Dubai.
Bye, Dubai.
Bye. The Jerusalem Post podcast travel edition is sponsored by worldjewishtravel.org, the number one platform for planning your Jewish cultural trips.